This is a Dragon Blazer production.
This is Unsolved Comedy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Unsolved Comedies. How are y'all doing? Hope you're doing good. Well, here we are, yet again, with me, your host, Kizea, and my co-host,
Stefan.
And we've got an extra special guest, guys. Good guest.
Yeah, the best, actually.
Best, actually.
It is I, Craig Adkins of the Pro Wrestling Apologist podcast. And when Kazea came to me about a murder podcast, it was like, in the world of professional wrestling, I know a lot about murder and mystery. Like in 1993, the murder mystery of professional wrestler Dino Bravo, who was found dead, shot 17 times, and nobody has figured out who killed him yet.
Wait, that's true?
It's true.
Holy crap.
Steven.
Oh, I've been seeing him on the other podcast I did, the Rage Blaze show.
Yeah.
You will find that somewhere around the year 1993, you will see a lot less of him. As he was murdered by being shot 17 times.
That's so fucked up because now you've been making fun of a dead guy.
Well, I mean, yeah.
If you make fun of any professional wrestlers, a 50-50 chance you're making fun of a dead guy. Those guys don't last very long.
I mean,
those guys don't last.
I just didn't know he was a dead guy that's been shot 17 times to die.
Yeah.
One more thing. We do have another person here. I don't know if he's going to speak. He might. Don't know. He's over there.
Talking about Gizmo the cat?
No. I was talking about my boyfriend.
He speaks a lot.
I was talking
about everybody.
Yeah, he's over there. He might chime in. He might not. Don't know yet. We'll see. Let's get started and talk about the court case surrounding 8-year-old boys' murder. 3 of them, to be specific.
You really know how to
insert sad trombone sound here.
Please help me, guys. I'm stuck with them all the time. So there's 2 trials that happen. And the reason is basically because I actually did some research and found out exactly what Jesse Miss Kelly's IQ was at the time of all of this happening. And his IQ was 72. So when I said he potentially was special needs, I wasn't far off because he was like borderline, like he was right on the level of like mental retardation. I'm not using that as a slur. That's literally like, he was on the borderline of that.
He was very uneducated.
Horribly so. Also, we apologize if you hear some kind of like frying sounds in the background. My boyfriend's cooking dinner, so, you know, you might hear some noise.
Of all people to apologize, it'd be me because I'm the one zooming in that doesn't get to enjoy any of this delicious food.
This guy asked me if my boyfriend puts pickle juice in his fried chicken, and I was disgusted.
And then everybody in the South...
You think you're disgusted. I'm more disgusted that there's no pickle juice in that chicken.
I don't like pickles. Like, oddly, like, I like to eat pickles by themselves, but I don't like them on my sandwiches. You know what I'm saying?
If you had fried chicken with pickle juice in it, I think it doesn't have some overwhelming pickle. Okay, this is off topic.
Off topic.
Welcome to the Southern Fried Chicken Podcast. Fried chicken.
I'm your host, Kentucky Fried Craig.
Kentucky Fried Craig. Can I call you that from now on for the rest of forever?
The Colonel Craig Atkins.
Okay, I swear to God, we're done. Okay. This is as bad as the KKK cave mentioned from last episode.
This is an episode about the mystery of who put the pickle juice in the chicken.
Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to cover Jesse Miss Kelly's confession, because this guy who basically, from what I've read, had the mental capacity of a 6 or 7 year old.
Yeah, he was very, is very much like, what's his name from Making a Murderer, that just wanted to know when he could get out to watch WrestleMania.
Exactly. Literally, like, in this case, like, I'm going to play a clip in a little bit where this guy literally talks about how Jesse was coerced in his confession. And it's his name is Dr. Oshie. And we'll get more into him in a little bit, but I'm going to play that clip and you guys will have a little more information. Let's talk about the confession first. So Jesse Miss Kelly is taken into custody on June 3rd. He's picked up at this chick's house. This chick that also made up a complete story about how Damien and Jesse and Jason had taken her to some witch meeting. I don't know. She was
which was this was like at the tail end of the Satanic Panic.
Exactly. So,
and it's a huge part of why this case got the media attention that it got, and why they were convicted, and why the whole country had hated them so much. And, you know,
but anyway, so this lady, the police told her, hey, if you can make up a story and bring it to us as an informant, we'll give you the reward money that's supposed to go to somebody with information. And so she made up this story. They told her to talk to Damien and get information. She didn't get any information, but she wanted that reward money. She was a single mother in West Memphis, poor, and she needed the reward money. So she made up this crazy story and gave it to the police and got the reward money. But they actually, like, the day before Jesse Miss Kelly was interviewed, they picked him up from this chick's house. And just the day before, she had said, oh, I don't feel safe around him. I don't want my son around him. But he stayed at her house that night.
Yeah.
Don't really know. Weird as shit. But here we are. So on June 3rd, Jesse Miss Kelly is taken into custody. Not arrested. Taken into custody for questioning. And from 9 a.m. to 2:45-ish p.m., he was questioned repeatedly for hours without it being recorded.
Yeah.
What happened from 9 a.m. to 2:45, nobody knows because they didn't record anything. And I don't know, like, if you know common practices for
probably a whole lot of feeding him the information because they had already made the decision that this was their guy, whether they knew any evidence fit him or not.
Oh yeah, they knew he had a low IQ.
It was probably them legitimately convincing him that he did it.
Oh yeah, if they literally knew, like, that they kept telling him over and over, if you just tell us the truth, if you just tell us what we want to hear, we'll let you go home. We'll let you go home. We just need you to tell us what we want to hear. We need you to tell us the truth. And then we'll let you go home. And they said that to him over and over and over again. And this kid has the mental capacity of a six-year-old. He's going to do whatever they want because he just wants to go home. He wants to go home. He wants to see his dad. He wants to see his girlfriend. He just wants to go home, you know? So he's going to do whatever they tell him. So this is a very coerced, very led confession. Even in the recorded parts, it's extremely led. And I'm not going to play any of it because it's awful. Like, I feel so bad listening to this kid confess. And, like, we'll talk about some parts later on that were literally coerced, where he would say one thing and they would say, do you mean this? Or point for him.
Yeah.
So very coerced, very led. Bad.
I do think the police did genuinely think that he was involved, but they were not going to use the right tactics to get him to confess it. They were going to make sure that confession. Lazy police work.
Yes. So at 9 a.m., Jesse Miss Kelly arrives at the West Memphis Police Department. And just so we all understand each other, I'm using pretty much the same sources that I used last time. This is Stephanie Harlow's timeline because I couldn't find a timeline. So I am borrowing this information from her, but she breaks down everything into pieces. So at 9 a.m., Jesse gets to the police station, right? Cool, fine. Between 9 a.m. and 10:45, we don't know anything that happens. Nothing. At 10 a.m., the pre-polygraph interview happens. And that's where they're like, they ask you the same question that they're going to ask you in the polygraph and the same question that they're going to ask you after the polygraph. And then at 11:15, they have to leave the police station. And Jesse goes with them and they have to go find his dad because Jesse's still a minor at this time. I think he was 17. So they had to go find his dad so that his dad could give permission for his son to be questioned and polygraphed. Jesse's father gives permission, and at 1:30, there's a one-hour-long polygraph. And we never see the polygraph. And just to be completely clear, guys, polygraphs are not admissible in court because there's so many things that can...
Yeah.
So just because he failed a polygraph or the police said that he failed a polygraph does not mean he's guilty. They're not admissible in court.
They're a mere suggestion.
Literally a suggestion. So at 10:40 or 12:40, the post-polygraph interview happens and they're like, listen, we know you're lying. The polygraph said you were lying. The polygraph said that everything that you just told them in the room was deceptive. And Jesse's like, I don't understand. I told him the truth. And they're like, this is science. So we know that you're lying. You don't have to tell us that you're lying. We already know that you're lying. So they
pester Jesse's him. Like, what science?
Jesus, Craig. But so they kind of pester him and they treat him pretty poorly. And then at 2:20, Jesse admits that he's present during the murders. And this is one of the problems. We don't know what was said. This part wasn't recorded. So we don't know if they, like, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Chris Watts case, but the Chris Watts case is a case where a man named Chris Watts killed his pregnant wife and his two daughters. Horrible case, awful case. But in that case, one of the interviewers, the polygraph tester, comes in and she's like, well, did Shanann do something? Did Shanann do something? And then you felt like you had to kill Shanann because Shanann had done this. And it's thought by a lot of people that they maybe made this suggestion. Well, you were lying, so we know you were there, but did you maybe not take part in anything? Were you maybe just there when the murders happened?
Yeah, and I think in the Chris Watts case, they were feeding into his ego.
Exactly.
And they were trying to see if they knew the truth, and they were trying to see if he would if his ego would adapt to this to a different story.
Right.
To a confession where he turned into Shanann was abusing the kids and he did it because he had to rescue his kids and blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Like,
this is a very separate situation
from
that.
This is a completely different
situation. Less ego and more.
I just brought that up to show that this is something that's commonly used.
A police tactic.
It's a police tactic. But you have to understand that there is a massive difference between talking to a man that's incredibly smart and in his 30s and using this tactic and talking to what is essentially a six-year-old.
It works perfectly well with an egotistical piece of shit, but it doesn't work so well with a poor, dumb kid.
Okay.
in the nicest way possible.
I take it the police are aware that he's not exactly the brightest.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They are 100%. Completely aware. Like, you listen to this kid talk, like...
If you listen to him talk, you'd be fully aware.
That I can play you a clip of him talking, but you listen to this kid talking. You can tell just from hearing him speak. He's not very bright. He's not bright at all. Like, he's literally...
He'd be easy to convince that he murdered someone and didn't realize that he murdered someone.
Exactly. Like, that's where we're talking about. So, finally, at 2:44, 2:45-ish, to 3:18, we have the first recorded interview. And that first recorded interview is where they do a lot of suggesting to him. And they're like, what happened here? Did this happen? When did you go do this? There's a lot of leading in this first interview. And then the second recorded interview happens about 30 minutes later, and there's just as much leading and just as much coercion and just as much suggestion. And they actually give out information that they shouldn't give out. And then after that in the evening at about 10:30, Jason Baldwin and Damian Echols are both arrested as a result of Jesse's confession. Now, I do want to talk about one other tactic before we move on. The other tactic I want to talk about is something that I call the circle tactic. I don't know the technical name for it, but I call it the circle tactic. And what it is if, let's say that you're on trial and I'm interviewing you and I say, I draw a circle on my paper and I put 3 X's in the circle in this case, and then like 70.
And that's where Jamie sees circle. It and says, well, that's clearly a square.
Well, so let me draw the picture. Do I have a pen out here? Do you have a pen? Hang on. I'm getting a pen because I feel like it would be easier to show this tactic.
I could zoom you a pen, I would. But
if I could zoom you a pen. Thank you, honey.
Not very helpful.
So this tactic essentially looks like this. Circle with 3 X's in it, and then a bunch of other X's outside the circle. And they tell Jesse, who has the mind of a 6-year-old, right, that the people inside the circle are the problem. The people inside the circle are the bad guys, right? So yeah. Do you want to be inside the circle with the bad guys that are going to go to jail and get life in prison and get the death penalty? Or do you want to be outside the circle with the 50 other exes that are police? That's basically what the tactic is that they used against somebody with the mental capacity of a 6-year-old.
Yeah. It's the snitch on your friends.
I want to be in the circle. Snitch on these guys.
And you'll get your freedom.
Exactly. And like, you have to think, and this is all done by Gary Gitchell. The first recorded interview is done by Gary Gitchell. We talked about him in the first episode.
He's sexiest head of the name.
But he does this circle tactic and he's like, do you want to be in the circle with the bad guys or do you want to be outside the circle? And of course, Jesse's got like the mind of a 6-year-old and he's like, I don't want to get in trouble. I want to be outside the circle with the good guys, right? And Gary Gitchell's like, then you need to tell us the truth and tell us exactly what happened. And that's when Jesse starts responding to the tactics that they're trying to use. And he starts doing what they want him to do and saying,
probably with information that had been spoon-fed to him during that time that is unaccounted for.
So when we actually talk about the trial, we talk about a guy named Warren D. Holmes, and he worked on the JFK and Martin Luther King murders, both of them. So very high profile dude, right?
Yeah.
Definitely has a background in, you know, forensic, whatever the fuck. And he said that he believes somebody like Jesse.
That's what the actual study is called, forensic, whatever the fuck.
Exhibit forensic, whatever the fuck.
But he says that somebody like Jesse would have done anything to go home at that time. He really didn't want to.
Harken back to Brendan Dassey. I remembered his name now. just wanting to get out of there to watch WrestleMania.
Yeah, literally. Let me play a clip real quick. This is that thing by Dr. Oshii that I was talking about. I have
Oshii.
Dr. Oshii. I'm trying to find it because I did have it written down somewhere. There it is. Okay. So let me see if I can pull this up real quick. It's in my notes. And basically he's talking about Jesse being misled or Jesse being led to a severe degree in this confession. I have to put it up.
Steven, sing when there's silence.
Yeah, I requested. So thank you. There's no dead
Steven,
space.
Steven, please sing.
Okay, so... Because my tactic has been to... Basically, I can't go to the timestamps, so I've basically just been commenting the timestamps that I need so that I can pull them up with ease, quickly. So...
This little light of mine. Oh, you ready now?
Yes.
It is directly suggested to Jesse that the correct answer is this happened at night. Immediately upon that being suggested, Jesse responds by accepting, and now he starts to use the word at night, where he had never used it before. That is an influence tactic. It is a way of getting someone to accept something out of pressure and out of suggestion.
The press. Okay. That was Dr. Oshii talking about it. That was a clip that I actually had to use from Stephanie's video because I tried to find it independently, and it's from the middle of the West Memphis 3 Paradise Lost documentary. It's difficult to find because the Paradise Lost documentary is over an hour long. If you guys have not seen it, I would highly recommend watching it if you're into this case. So I did play that directly from her video just because it was easier to find than going through and skimming the whole Paradise Lost online that you can't even find. So we hear that said by Dr. Oshii. So we obviously know what Dr. Oshii thinks. He thinks that Jesse was completely led. And that was at Jesse's trial. And nobody paid attention to it. The jury, nobody. They didn't care that somebody had said that he had been led and coerced. They didn't care. They just wanted to convict him.
Well, three sweet baby angel eight-year-olds died. So, you know.
And once again, the end of the satanic panic, they had been fed this
information,
Satanist horseshit. It's a public is easy to sway when there's a public satanic panic.
Literally. In this small little Bible Belt town, they knew what they were doing. So
let's
talk about a couple of, just a few things that Jesse got wrong. Because Jesse got a lot of things wrong in his confession. But we're just going to talk about a couple of them. So when Jesse is asked what the boys are tied up with, he says that they were tied up with rope, which is not true. The boys were tied up with shoelaces.
Oh.
They were tied up with licorice, right?
Oh. He gets the boys' names and pictures wrong. So at the start of all of this, they put the pictures in front of him and they're like, you need to name the boys and point at their picture when you're talking about what happened to them. And he was pointing at Stevie, but talking about Chris Byers, and pointing at Michael Moore, but talking about Stevie. He wasn't getting the names right. And at some point they decided that they didn't want him to keep talking if he was going to sound like he didn't know what he was talking about.
Why?
Convenient.
Because that, you know, they that might make him look innocent, which he is. Yeah. But so they didn't want him to keep talking if it sounded like it was wrong, right? We want to convict this guy. So they told him, don't worry about the names. Just point to the picture. Point to the picture and tell us what happened.
We really want to throw you in jail, young man.
He also gets.
We really don't want to have to do any more police work. We just want this sealed and shut.
Jesse also gets the timeline wrong. You heard Dr. Oshii talk about it. He talks about how Jesse kept saying, in the morning, the boys skipped school. We went at this time. We went early in the day. And at some point, one of the officers in the room when he was interviewed is like, you told me earlier that you did this at night. So tell me more about how you did this at night. And then all of a sudden, Jesse was saying at night. That's what Dr. Oshie was talking about when he said, you told me earlier that this happened at night. Jesse had never said in the recorded interview that anything happened at night. But they suggested that to him. Low IQ, he's going to start responding that way. He's easy to sway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if he had been convinced himself that he had actually done it.
Well,
shit, I killed these kids. Damn it.
Well, he says that there's like an interview where he's like, I didn't even know that my lawyer was working for me. I thought he was just another cop and I was just telling my lawyer what they told me to tell the police. So
the lawyer was probably frustrated and knows the deal, knows that he's been coerced, but he can't get, but
at some
he's
point,
so ingrained in the lie.
Well, his father tells him, son, you need to tell the truth. This guy is here to help you. You're innocent. I know you're innocent. I know you're not capable of doing this.
This poor kid doesn't even know what the truth is anymore.
And that's when he's like, I didn't do this. I have no idea why they're trying to pin this on me, but they told me that if I tell this story over and over and over again, I can go home. And so he did what he thought he would get him home because he's a kid.
So maybe I missed something somewhere, but what did the police, why did the police believe it was him?
Because so Jerry Driver had this satanic occult task force, and him and his task force had come up with this list of 8 names of people that might be involved in Satanism and the occult. Jesse, Jason, and Damien's names were all on it, and they were the only 3 that knew each other. And they knew that Jesse was...
dumb.
Yeah. Low IQ. So they decided that they would focus on Jesse, and they really wanted Jason and Damien. They didn't want Jesse. They just knew that they could get Jesse to confess to whatever they said.
And Stephen, if you know anything about what the Satanic Panic was, it was a largely manufactured, like there was, I don't think any of the cases that were considered part of the Satanic Panic were actual real things that happened.
Well, and you have to remember
that. But it was where people... Go ahead, sorry.
You have to remember that like the Satanic Panic took place probably in the late 80s, mid to late
80s. Yeah, this was at the tail end of it.
And what sparked the Satanic Panic was everything that we talked about in the first episode. We talked about the Manson murders happening in the late 60s.
Yep.
We talked about Anton LaVey writing the Satanic Bible. We talked about Aleister Crowley.
It all largely came from Jerry Falwell.
Like all of these things happened. So then people became terrified of the occult and the Satanic Panic, and people fed off of that.
It was the entire nation, but even more so the Bible Belt. They just thought, you know, Satanism meant you're drinking babies' blood and you're
literally,
you know, you're killing little boys. So it was all wrapped
up
into that.
They literally just used Jesse. There's no reason that they have to think that Jesse did anything. There's nothing tying Jesse to the crime scene.
That he was there.
Nope.
Other than he was the creepy kid in town that everybody thought was going to be a murderer someday because he...
No. That's Damien.
Because he dabbled
Jesse,
in... Oh, yeah.
Jesse,
okay, you're right. You're
Jesse
right.
Jesse was friends with Jason.
An associate.
And he knew Damien through Jason. So they knew that they had a link to the guy that they really wanted, which was Damien. And they knew that Jesse was stupid. And they were like, let's take him in for questioning and we can get him to say whatever the
probably,
fuck we want him to say.
They were legitimately after Damien because they probably did think he was involved. So they were going to go after his dumbest associate. his dumbest, you know, not even a direct associate.
When you want to go after Two-Face.
Literally. It was awful.
Sure.
At some point, and you remember when I said that there's literally a point where he is coerced and you can hear it. I'm not going to go through and find the clip because, like I said, I don't want to put this kid being manipulated out there. If you want it, it's not difficult to find. There is a point when Jesse is asked where the boys were cut. And he says, oh, this one was cut here, this one was cut here, and this one was cut on his bottom. When I say bottom, what do you think of?
Well, the ass cheek.
But. Now, the police officer then says, do you mean here? Do you know what a penis is? Was he cut on his penis? Is that where he was cut? Is that what you mean when you say bottom, is that he was cut on his penis? And then Jesse immediately says, wait. Yes, that's where he was cut.
Were they cut on their penis?
We talked about Chris Byers being
one
castrated.
One of them was castrated, but I thought you said it was a snapping turtle that
it was. Dick off. It was, but these guys are convinced that he was
castrated.
It was,
but because of,
No, they didn't.
Yet?
No, this is.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine. Yep. But if I said, somebody with the mental capacity of a 6-year-old said, oh, he was cut on his bottom, I'm not going to be like, do you know what a penis is? Is that what you really mean? Was he cut here? He was cut on his penis, wasn't he? And was he cut in his groin area?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was led. Like, that is one of the key points to seeing that Jesse was very led and very.
Sounds like really shitty police work.
Awful police work.
I believe we talked about this in another episode.
We did.
Fuck the police.
There's also one major thing that Jesse gets wrong for all of you anti-West Memphis 3ers out there. Do you guys think that these kids are guilty? Jesse claimed that the 3 boys were raped. And there is no evidence. They're literally, the boys were not raped. Even when they did their autopsy and the original autopsy, which was complete bullshit, there was no evidence that the boys were raped. And Jesse said that the boys were raped, which is bullshit.
And as you mentioned,
I think that the boys were killed after they got naked themselves. Because the boys probably got naked to go swimming in the water. 8-year-olds. Eight-year-old boys that want to go swimming in a creek might take their clothes off and their underwear just might come off with them.
And as you had mentioned, the thing that people looked at as being the most sexual part of this murder was the
snapping turtle.
Was the snapping turtle, which they had not been associated with a snapping turtle yet. It had been associated with a sex crime of passion.
Exactly.
And but it wasn't. It was a snapping turtle.
Right. So after all of this happens, not a very convincing case, if you ask me. Not a convincing case at all. But Jesse is found guilty on February 4th.
So they got out quickly, right?
Huh?
They got out quickly, right?
The jury? Yeah.
No, the West Memphis 3, they got out quickly because it was not a convincing case.
No.
They
spent 18 years in prison.
Oh. Well.
Stephen, God damn it.
Damn it.
On February 4th, 1994, Jesse is found guilty. He gets 1 count of first degree, 1 and 2 counts of second degree, and that gets him life plus 40 years in prison.
I kill that kid that I don't remember killing again?
So now we're going to talk about Damien and Jason's trial. And this is where shit starts to get fucked.
Wacky.
Crazy. So let's talk about the first thing that we have is an expert witness.
Expert.
And I'm going to play you a clip of this expert witness talking about the occult. And let me tell you, not fucking convincing. Not by a long goddamn shot is it convincing.
Not horribly expert.
Bad expert work. Bad.
Hello? Is it me you're looking for? Okay, hurry up.
I'm getting there. I have to...
Nobody's looking for you, Stephen.
Sorry. Hate to tell you, but he's right. Are you looking for Stephen, Craig?
He's easy to find.
I wasn't hiding.
He's easy to find.
If I step outside my house and look over in that direction, I might be able to see him over the horizon.
All right, I have this pulled up. I'm just going to click on that real quick to bring it back to the original point.
called overtones or
if. Oh, sorry.
Literally thought that was Davey for a second.
Davey's not an occult expert.
No, he's not.
Are you an occult expert?
Sounds like he's a chicken expert, except he doesn't use pickle juice.
I have read the Necronomicon.
No?
Okay, this is at the beginning of Paradise Lost.
In looking at young people involved in the occult, do you see any particular type of dress? I have personally observed people wearing black fingernails, having their hair painted black, wearing black t-shirts.
Awful.
Some friends, they will tattoo themselves.
Good Lord Almighty, no.
Jesus.
Make it stop. Make it stop. Black shirts, tattoos. That
this
sounds
guy's
like
name.
All of my friends are in Christian rock bands. They all hail, wear.
Hail Satan, indeed.
All my friends are in Christian rock bands, all wear black clothing and have tattoos.
So, if you don't notice that, if you don't recognize that bit of speech, it's actually used in a song, the intro to a song by Black Veil Brides called Knives and Pens, specifically trying to bring it, like, not bring attention to the case, but they were trying to make a point by using that.
Yeah. Because
their style was super black hair, black nail polish, black t-shirts. They drew, like, so stitches on their face, emo. White face paint, screamo, kind of. At the time, they were screamo, very screamo. But now they're more of a metal type deal. But it was.
I believe they murdered someone, didn't they?
Huh? No, they.
Okay. So they were Satanists that murdered people. Clearly, yeah. description that I'm hearing.
Yeah,
Satanists. This guy's name is Dale Griffiths, and let me tell you, he's basically a mail order PhD. Okay, because he had a PhD in the occult, and that's what made him an expert.
A mail order PhD. Dick. Okay, we're talking about a different PhD. Okay.
We're talking about a different PhD, Craig. Sorry to disappoint. I know you like pretty hot dicks, but that's not what this is.
Move along.
And when he is asked, what classes did you take to get your master's in the occult?
Satan 101.
Satanomy.
I listen to a Black Sabbath album backwards.
Virgin Sacrifice, version 2.
God damn, I not Black Sabbath. God, no, not Black Sabbath.
Oh, they're Satanists.
Not Metallica.
And Ozzy Osbourne, if you think of him, you think of the worst Satanist.
Like, I love that these guys focused, like the cops focused on a couple of teenagers that listen to Metallica. Like, they listen to Metallica. They wore black Metallica band t-shirts. That made them Satanists. Like, okay, sure.
Only they could flash forward 30 years to see Metallica now. They're all like clean shaven dads.
Literally. That happens to everybody, though. Like, that literally happened to, I don't know if you guys know, like, Good Charlotte, but they, like, when they came out, they were, like, teenagers or, like, really young adults, and they all had mohawks, and they all had, like, they had eyeliner on, and they all had, like, funny-looking clothes, and, like, now they have, like, beards, and, like, they're buff, and, like, they have dad bods, and you're like, wow.
People grow up. Son of a bitch!
Yeah, it's weird.
So when he's asked,
you look at me 20 years ago, I had spiky blue hair, baggy UFO pants. No, I'm just awesome. Dad.
You wore JNCO jeans? Is that what that is? That
I did, actually. They were like UFOs. And,
oh, damn. He wore JNCO jeans, everybody. He's a murderer. He's a child murderer.
Hail Satan.
I had a wallet chain. I never got a tattoo because my mommy wouldn't let me.
My mommy wouldn't let me.
Oh, Mom, I really want to support Satan.
So when this guy, when David Griffiths or Dale Griffiths is asked, what classes did you take? You know, you're an expert in the occult. What classes did you take to get your master's degree? You have a PhD. It goes associates, bachelor's, master's, PhD. So what'd you do to get your master's? And he's like, well, I didn't take any classes. I didn't take any. Okay, that's fine. I understand. Maybe you got your master's in something else. Your PhD is in the occult and Satanism. So what classes did you take to get your PhD? And he's like, oh, I didn't take any.
What school do you go to for that?
A mail order school, Craig. A mail order PhD school. I think it's literally called Columbia Pacific. I don't even know if it still exists, and I don't know if it's still a mail order school. Now it might be a legitimate university, but it was like Columbia Pacific or something like that. That was like the school that this guy got his mail order PhD from.
I got my PhD by playing Dungeons and Dragons version 3.
Version 3. So then we have a guy
who's
named...
Shut that cat the fuck up.
I would love... Can we just kick Gizmo? Let's let him outside for a little bit.
No.
The last time we let Gizmo outside, he was gone for a week. Okay. Also, that was a joke about kicking cats. I have two beautiful fur cat babies, and I would never kick them. It was a joke,
I have two beautiful cats, and I love all cats, but I really still want to kick Stevens right now.
So
I don't even know if Gizmo's the one meowing.
I mean, the only other option is Pumpkin, and Pumpkin doesn't talk like that.
Pumpkin's over.
Oh, it is Pumpkin?
Yeah, he's over there.
Shut up, Pumpkin. I love you. Mommy loves you, but shut up. Mommy loves you, but shut up. Thank you. So Michael Carson. Michael Carson is this random dude who's in jail for drug use, of all things, drug use. And he was in jail with Jason for a short time. And he claims that Jason confessed to him. He told him everything. And he told him how the kids were raped. He told them how the kids were, like, cut up. He told them how the kids were
tied up. Did you know
if
this alleged confession is similar to the one that he told in court?
It's been retracted. In fact, the guy's counselor was like, I discussed the details of the case with him because he was just curious what was going on with the case. So I told him a little bit about the case. That's how he knew that the boys were allegedly cut. And that's how he knew that the boys were tied up. And that's how he knew this. Okay. And that's how he knew that. Cause his counselor came out to the court and was like, listen, buddy, this is not real. He has been planning this for a while. He wants to get out of jail early.
So you think it was more him just making up off the top of his head rather than questioning him himself to see what he would say.
I think that he talked to his counselor about the details of the case because that's what the counselor says, is that they talked about the details of the case, right? Cool.
Okay.
So they talk about the details of the case, and then Michael uses all of those details that he talked with his counselor about to claim that Jason confessed to him. And he has also come out and he's like, it was all made up. And I know that Jason will never forgive me, but I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I just wanted to get out of jail because I wanted drugs. So, yeah. Bad guy. So Damien Sternal is another
desperate guy.
Desperate guy.
Drugs are bad.
So Damien's journal is another piece of evidence that is complete bullshit that's brought in to the court case. And the two things that they have him read from his journal is a William Shakespeare quote from A Midsummer Night's Dream, something about life being – I don't remember. It was like life is a shadow. It's a tale told by an idiot, something like that. It's from A Midsummer Night's Dream. There's a clip of
him – box of chocolates?
No. I could find that.
Oh, another idiot.
That one, so we would have to wait for me to find it. If you want,
Steven, start singing.
Watch.
I was gonna sing Metallica, but that might get us some copyright.
Like, do you want me to find the clip? I'll find the clip.
I don't think they can get you on a copyright of something horribly rendered.
horribly rendered. I mean, it would be horribly rendered. It's coming from Steven.
Every band,
let's be
it
honest.
Would be Metallica. It would be Lars that comes after us.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, you're right. I guess it would be the one.
Yeah, it'd be the one band. It's like,
band
I don't
that
care.
Actually would care. Like, oh.
it's a mess. It's a mess.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts, diddly dee. There diddly-dee. They are standing in the rain.
Big bunch. It's in a row. Why wouldn't are you adding rain into it?
I don't know. I only know this song from freaking Lion King.
Oh, jeez. Do you not know, like, any other songs from Lion King?
Well.
Why that song?
Why that
song you don't even know?
Just popped in my head. Zazu sings it.
Zazu is like the worst character in the Lion King.
Zazu sounds like a random name I would think of when I am intentionally calling Kazuya by the wrong name.
He's like, hi, Kazuki, Zazu, whatever that was.
Kazazu?
Kazazu.
Zazu was played by Rowan Atkinson, and he was great.
Okay, shut up. Nobody cares.
We're done. We're done with the Zazu talk. If we're really talking about good support characters, Iago was the best fucking support character. I want to hear it.
Played by Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. And have you ever heard Gilbert Gottfried's real voice?
It's exactly like...
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not. There's literally like a voice. There's a recording of a voicemail that he left somebody, and he's talking in his normal voice, and it sounds like it's odd because it's a normal voice.
Oh. He has two different voices where he's got his low voice, and then when he talks loud is when he gets the. I always hear him in interviews on different podcasts I listen to.
Let me see. I'm trying to. I'm just, at this point, there it is. Gotcha. Perfect. There it is. This is also from Stephanie's video, just easier to find than going through an hour-long documentary.
Life is but a walking shadow. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. That's from A Midsummer Night's Dream by William Shakespeare. Pure black, looking clear. My work is soon done here. Try getting back from me that which used to be. That is off a Metallica tape called Injustice for All. It talks about how warped the court systems are. Stuff like that.
So that's him talking about the quotes that were found in his journal that were evidence of him being a devil worshiper. Yes, William Shakespeare. Did y'all not know that William Shakespeare was a devil worshiper?
No, that's true.
Oh, yeah. Just at a time where anything remotely dark was considered. You know, the fact that you do a murder podcast, somebody would look at that as being too dark and you'd be a Satanist.
Well, let's be real for a second. A Midsummer Night's Dream is a comedy. It's a funny play. Yeah. So why the fuck were they looking at that and being like, that's so dark? Like, no, it's a
dark quote.
It's a joke, my guy.
Literally.
Well, we'll talk some more, but
I remember I was a kid during this time of the Satanic Panic, and I do remember like anything that was remotely the church that I grew up in. I'd say if you played Dungeons and Dragons, you were letting demons into you, and it's all a lot of that stuff is still around in a lot of dumber people, but it was pretty huge back then. Everybody was afraid of the hiding Satanist.
We're hiding the Satanists in our basements. They're like the Jews. We're protecting them in our basement. We're the good guys here. We're the good guys. Okay. That was a joke, guys. I'm sorry. Please don't leave. Please don't leave.
I love how you apologize. I'm sorry for telling a joke on this comedy podcast.
I don't want anybody to get offended. And then they'd be like, you used hate speech against me, so I'm going to leave.
I'm leading the charge to cancel Kazuya.
He's going to start a petition. Cancel Kazuya. Okay.
Hashtag cancel Kabuki.
Hey, Kazuki.
Yeah. Like who?
So the prosecution did try to use a list of names that Damien had written in code. They were like, it had his name on it, Jason's name, his son's name, and Aleister Crowley's name. And for some reason, the fact that he wrote Aleister Crowley's name in this coded fucking alphabet was just he was guilty. You wrote Aleister Crowley's name. You're guilty. What? I'm sorry. What?
He was just a dark kid. He was a kid, you know.
Literally,
you could have looked at me at that age and with the same lens and been like, oh, this kid is a potential murderer because I listened to whatever I listened to back then. Literally. Darker music. Probably the same stuff that Eccles was listening to.
Literally, Metallica, Pink Floyd, probably. Yeah. Black Sabbath.
I've listened to all those bands.
Are you a Satan worshiper?
Okay,
obviously.
Ricky Martin.
So they try to use this list, and they're like, you want to host your crowd. God, you wrote Aleister Crowley's name. You're guilty. And people are like, yeah, he wrote Aleister Crowley's name. He's guilty. That's what that means, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep, obviously.
There also is rumors. I don't know how true it is, but there's rumors that Jason was offered a deal, like a shorter life sentence. I think his deal was 40 years in prison with the chance for parole in 15. And all he had to do was testify against Damien. And he said, no, my mom raised me to tell the truth, and I'm not going to lie and ruin my friend's life. He's Damien's best friend. He's like, I'm not going to lie and ruin my best friend's life.
You got to have a little bit of naive trust in the system to work the truth out.
He's like,
unfortunately, the system was working against them.
Literally. He's like, this is my best friend. I'm not going to testify against him to make sure that I can get out of jail.
If we're going to go to jail together
type situation.
Eccles was the one they want. He was the town pariah. He was the one that the town thought he was creepy.
If you look at Damien now, Damien is extremely well-read. I love hearing Damien speak in interviews and shit because he's just so intelligent. And the way that he speaks.
He was the pariah, and I think he kind of liked it. They worked against him in this situation, but he was, he didn't want to be the popular kid.
He never went to college. I think that's what shocks me the most is he's just extremely well-read. He's incredibly intelligent. We'll have to play Steven some clips after this is all over.
He had 18 years to do nothing but read.
Exactly. He is smart as shit. This guy is crazy smart. And he was smart as shit 2 years after he went to jail when they did Paradise Lost 2. And they were interviewing him. He had spent all of that time reading and doing research, and he was smart as shit then. You would listen to him talk, and he's like I think he makes a comment once. He's like, people have this twisted trust in authority. If authority tells you that this guy's a bad guy, you're gonna go with what the authority says because that's what authority says. He talks and he's smart and he's intelligent. And it just I love listening to him talk. I love listening to his interviews. Looking at him now, he is into Wicca and he is into alchemy and he is he got married with a Buddhist ceremony. He's not your traditional everyday spiritual person,
after
but that
he
doesn't.
Got out or before?
Yeah, after he got out.
Okay.
He's not your traditional spirit. Well, technically, he got married while he was still in prison, but everything else is happening after. But he's not your typical spiritual person, but he's definitely himself. And I don't think that any of those things I just mentioned, being interested in alchemy or being interested in Wicca or talking about light magic, not dark magic. He talks about light magic, which is the exact opposite of what Aleister Crowley talked about. Aleister Crowley talked about black magic, but he talks about light magic. And you know, you
and even just, even if he called himself a Satanist and had a, you know, had a pentagram on his head, doesn't change a single thing about his worth.
Just because you're a Satanist doesn't mean that you're automatically a child murderer or that you automatically kill somebody.
It just makes you a weird kid.
Right. It makes you a weird kid. It makes you a Satanist.
Weird kid doesn't make you a murderer.
Like, I know plenty of people that are Wicca, and to some people, Wicca is considered Satanism because it's technically witchcraft. And all of the people that I know that practice Wicca, they're weird as shit, and they're annoying as shit, but they're not murderers.
It's the religion of the nerd.
It's okay. The only person that I dislike that I've known to practice Wicca stole my boyfriend. So, you know, there we are.
I'm friends with a couple Wiccans.
Did she use black magic?
No. He broke up with me because of some issues with my family. And she like swooped in and like got with him. And she was awful and annoying. And like you could hear her voice and it just like, ugh. Like it literally would send me into like seizures if I heard it today. It's awful. It's like the most shrill, annoying voice I've ever heard in my life.
Went out to us like, "Do you like trees?
Do you like trees? Was that her pickup line? Was that the pickup line that Elena used? Do you like trees? Do you like trees?
I don't know what kind of pickup lines Wiccans would do. That seems like
I mean, it doesn't. The look on his face is telling me that's not the pickup line that she used. I mean, the occult is fine, but I was just asking you. I was specifically asking you.
Works with tarot cards and quite truly believes in the flow.
Yeah, literally. I mean, and he's not a murderer. No, I mean specifically like Elena.
I'm not a murderer. I promise.
Elena like identified herself as a Wiccan back before you and I even broke up. I was just asking you if her pickup line was "Do you like trees?" She was an idiot. Love.
Oh,
that.
You're talking about Davey. I thought you were talking about some other boyfriend.
No. She stole Davey from me. Like. Davey and I broke up, and she had been flirting with Davey the whole time that Davey and I were dating, and then we broke up, and she jumped on him. Huh?
Davey.
Yeah, months. She flirted with him for months while we were dating. It was awful.
Davey, you were banging a chick that didn't shave her armpits.
Craig asked if you were banging a chick that didn't shave her armpits. I mean, I don't think...
No,
Davey never banged her. I don't think he did. I told him if he banged her, he might catch something. So I told him to be very careful. I was like, if you ever leave me
for this chick
specifically, don't have sex with her because she's had sex with like 15 other guys, and we were only like 15 at the time. Like I was 14, but Elena was a year older than me, and she had fucked like 5 guys. And I was like, listen, please don't have sex with her. I don't want to see you get an STD from this bitch.
Really going off topic.
Sorry again.
It's not my podcast, but I feel like it's going off the rails.
He's like, we're gonna recenter. Okay. So Jason refuses this deal. I was just bringing up that I know Wiccans, and that is what Damien's involved in, and he is not a child murderer.
I don't know if
they ain't gonna steal your kids. They're just gonna steal your boy, or they ain't gonna kill your kids.
I love Wiccans. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Wiccans. Wiccans are cool as shit. Like, you guys have some really awesome beliefs. I just dislike this one specific Wiccan that stole my boyfriend. All the rest of y'all are cool. I just don't like her.
They're weird.
So. On March 18th.
They're weird and they smell like patchouli and they.
All right. That's enough, Craig. Stop attacking the Wiccans. Wiccans' lives matter, damn it.
Only black ones, though.
Are you done?
Black magicians.
Are you done?
I'm done. Okay. Go ahead.
So on March 18th, 1994, Jason is sentenced to life in prison and Damien is sentenced to death. All the evidence that we talked about, such wonderful evidence, right? Put them in prison for life and Damien spent 18 years on death row. And I imagine that can only be horrendous.
Yeah.
To spend 18 years of your life not knowing if you were the next one to go.
Yep.
Not knowing if you were the next one that was
always thought it. I mean, sometimes it's worked out, obviously, like in the case of Damian Echols. I always thought it was weird that it takes so long to get to that point.
Well, and he says, like, there's an interview that I'm going to play a clip from. It's not – the clip that I'm going to play isn't from him. It's actually from Pam Hobbs and then also from John Mark Byers. But in the clip, he's like, I watched people go to their death every single day. I watched guys – leave their cells, take their last meal, and not come back. And I didn't know if I was going to be the next one. I didn't know if I was going to make it out. You know, he even says before, he said in a different interview that he knew if he didn't take that Alford plea, he was never going to see the outside of the prison because they would kill him.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
I can't imagine what he went through with all of that. So the next thing we're going to talk about is some of the celebrities that supported them. We got some guys from Pearl Jam. We've got Johnny Depp. And you remember how I said that Terry Hobbs sued a chick from the Dixie Chicks?
I do remember this.
Natalie Maines is her name.
You mean the chick. It's just the chicks, though. They dropped the Dixie.
Yeah. So Natalie Maines from the Dipsy Chicks.
That would have been a good name.
So the two people that I focused on were Johnny Depp and Natalie Maines from the Dixie Chicks, because Johnny Depp raised a lot of money for the West Memphis 3. And if you look at Johnny Depp, it makes a whole fuck ton of sense why. Johnny Depp was 10 times weirder than Damian Echols and wasn't in prison for murder.
He's a weird dude.
He's weird as shit. I love Johnny Depp. Don't get me wrong. He's amazing, but he's weird as shit. So at some point, Natalie Maines is like, yo, this guy is fucked, right? Like, we should let the West Memphis 3 out because there's probably more info pointing to Terry because, like, I haven't talked about this yet, but there was a hair that was consistent with Terry Hobbs' hair, not consistent with any of the boys from the West Memphis 3, not Jason, Damian, or Jesse, but it was consistent with Terry's hair. And it was found in one of the shoelaces that was tying the boys up. And actually, a hair was found from one of Terry's friends in another one of the shoelaces that was tying up another boy. So there is literally more evidence pointing to Terry than there is the West Memphis 3. And Natalie Maines brings this up. I don't know if it was in an interview or in a concert. I'm not really sure. But she brings it up. And he's like, yo, I'm going to sue her. I'm going to sue Natalie Maines of the Dixie Chicks. Because that's what we do.
That sounds like a smart financial decision.
Yeah.
Well, I honestly, like, he probably thought this, like, was his big break. Like, he figured he was going to win this case. They were going to have to pay him a whole lot of money, and he could live off of murdering his stepson for the rest of his life.
Murdering stepson is a very lucrative business.
Yes, sirree. And this is during the court case for that is the first time that he's technically able to be openly questioned in court about the disappearance of his stepson. And we also know that the original case took place in 1993. Terry Hobbs was not officially questioned until 2007.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? 2007? What? Like, you guys didn't... And we'll talk about why he didn't get interviewed.
They really wanted to have their guys.
They really did.
Their guy specifically, Echols, more than the other two.
Literally. So the guy, we've talked about how the wounds were actually made. They were not made by a knife. They were made by animals, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the guy that actually discovered this, his name is Vincent DeMeo. And I think he discovered it between 2001 and 2007. I don't know what year specifically. But his name is Vincent DeMeo. He's a forensic pathologist. And he is the one who discovered that the wounds were actually made by animals.
Hey guys. You guys are idiots.
You guys are idiots. Let me pull up this picture. I actually have a picture for you of the wounds that a snapping turtle can make. And this is just a regular fucking snapping turtle. The snapping turtles that were in the creek that the boys were thrown in were alligator snapping turtles. So imagine what I'm about to show you, but worse.
Okay.
This is from a YouTube video where a guy gets bitten by a snapping turtle.
Why? Why are you doing this to me?
That is what his wound looks like. So if you imagine something like that, where there was no restriction of the, like, because they had to pour a whole bunch of alcohol on the turtle's head to get him to let go of the guy. So if you imagine there was no interference with a snapping turtle biting onto Chris Byers, you know, it probably just took it just took it off. You know what I'm saying? So no, Chris Byers was not castrated. It was eaten by a snapping turtle.
Yeah.
I hate to say that. I really do. It's awful. I don't
It's awful.
But
the whole thing is awful. It's
slightly less awful than the
A Satanist cutting your dick off.
Yeah.
Like
Well, the first well, thing I can't believe the police didn't realize is the fact that only one of their
victims was castrated, which is weird.
That's, another thing, can we be 100% sure that the turtle was not a Satanist itself?
Is the turtle a Satanist too? Okay.
Hail turtle Satan.
Sorry. I'm wheezing a lot over here today, guys. It's because normally I just have Steven, and now there's two of them. And Steven and Craig are very similar. You guys haven't seen enough of Craig to know. But
no, we're not.
Very similar in the way
there's, that there's like a 200-pound difference.
Oh, damn. Oh, damn. That was rough, Craig. I'm sorry, Steven. That was rough for you. Yeah.
Are you saying sorry to him? You just compared me to him.
So David Burnett sounds really similar.
I didn't do it.
I didn't.
I have sex with that woman.
What did I miss?
The last name that sounds similar to is Barnett, which is why I was nervous about saying it in the presence of my boyfriend, whose last name is Barnett.
Oh, yes. So what did Davey do?
Burnett with a U. Burnett. David Burnett. He was the original judge that tried the case. He spent 18 years denying these boys' appeals. 18 years. He just sat, like, he was supposed to run for state senator, and he put off running for state senator so he could continue to sit on this court case and deny Damian Echols and Jason Baldwin's appeals.
Someone should take a snapping turtle to his penis.
Can I do it?
Get a satanic snapping turtle to go to town on them.
If you can find a satanic snapping turtle, I'll let you
put it on. I feel like that actually is the most common religion of
those snapping turtles. So he spent 18 years turning these guys' appeals down. And when he was asked to recuse himself, he refused, and he said that this wouldn't have happened. He should have never let cameras in the courtroom, and this wouldn't have happened. So he knew that it was wrong, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
He's also an idiot. He said at some point, so when the prosecution...
He gave into the court of public opinion.
Yes.
Above all.
So when, during the original case, court case, the prosecution, or not the prosecution, the defense, I think one of Damien's lawyers... is trying to debunk the mail order PhD guy, right? Dale Griffiths, that's his name. He's trying to debunk this guy. And the judge says something along the lines of, you know, this, I don't like this because really you could have a third grade education and be an expert on something if you have other education that makes you an expert. And I was like, you can have a third grade what? A third grade, huh? Be an expert at what? Like, I was confused. I was really lost. Okay.
All those third grade experts down there.
So, like, your cat's an expert in snuggles. That's about it. She snuggles him.
It's valuable.
It's valuable. So, in 2007, Warner Spitz, who was on the JonBenet Ramsey case, and Richard Suverin, who helped get Ted Bundy convicted. They are both brought out as experts by Damien's lawyers in the new evidence that they have and the new experts that they have. So these two are high profile people. You know, anybody involved in the JonBenet Ramsey case and anybody involved in the Ted Bundy case. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely high profile people. These guys know what the fuck they're talking about, right? There's no DNA connecting the West Memphis
the big
crimes.
TV cases of the century.
Literally.
Twice.
Twice. And the knife that they claim was used wasn't even used. Let's talk about that knife for a second. I don't know if you guys have seen the picture, but
was it turtle face shaped?
No. So the knife, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the picture, but there's these divers holding a survival knife and their diving gear in like this lake, and they're holding this knife, right? And it's awful because the knife went into that lake a year prior to the murders even taking place.
Wow.
A whole year before. And they know that. They knew that it was in the lake because Jason's mother told them. She was like, listen, my son's innocent. He doesn't even have a knife. The only knife that he ever had, I threw out in the lake because I didn't want my son playing with knives. So the only knife he's ever owned is out in that lake. Right?
Wow.
And it's been out there for a year, so there's no way he could have used it to commit these murders, right? Right.
Found that knife.
They went out
into the water. And then he used that knife on these children.
And then they went swimming for it.
And then put it back in there.
And so they go into the water.
And then a snapping turtle came out with it and be like, you're looking for this.
So these divers go into the water and they find, like, they were only in the water for like 15, 20 minutes. They weren't in the water very long at all. They called the press beforehand. They were like, yo, come to this spot, my guy. We got the shit right here. It's going to be good. It's going to be great. Meet us there, right? So the press come and they come out of the water after like 15, 20 minutes of being in the water with a knife. And they hold it up like this and the press gets that picture and they're like, yes, guys, it's the shit. We got it.
See what we got? This kills, right?
This kills, right? So, yeah, it was just a mess because, like, they had no reason to think that the knife was used. It had been in the fucking water for a year. A year.
I feel like this is another good time to bring up that fuck the police.
Fuck the police. So, there's three other suspects besides the West Memphis Three. One of them is John Mark Byers. We've already talked about him. I don't think he did it. There's no reason. He had no motive. He loved his son very much. I also found out between recording this episode and the last episode that we recorded that John Mark Byers actually passed away earlier this year in like June, I think, of 2020. And he died in a car crash. So rest in peace, buddy. So he's actually died now. Let me talk about what people think. People think that he was focused on in Paradise Lost 2, and people think that he killed his wife, but there is no evidence that he killed his wife. Yes, his wife died under suspicious circumstances, but John Mark was very cooperative. He took a polygraph. He signed off so that his wife could have an autopsy done because I think he genuinely wanted to know what happened to her. I honestly think she probably died of a broken heart because I don't know how long you can survive after you bury your baby.
How did she die?
Yeah, how did she die?
She was apparently sleeping, and John Mark got out of bed to get some water, and he was like, honey, do you want anything? And she didn't respond. So he shook her, and he was like, hey, do you want anything to drink? And she didn't respond, and instead she started vomiting. So he runs and tells the police, or he runs and tells his neighbor, he's like, look, can you please call an ambulance? I'm going to try to save my wife, but she's puking, and I don't know what's wrong, and I don't want her to die, right? His friend calls an ambulance, and he starts trying to resuscitate his wife and trying to wake her up, and he turns her. I think it's said that he turned her on her side so she didn't choke on her own vomit, but I don't know for sure. But there's no evidence that killed her.
What reason do they think that I mean,
inconclusive.
What trauma could have been done?
Her autopsy inconclusive. Okay. They have no idea how she died.
It was weird.
There was drugs in her system, but the drugs were not enough. The drugs in her system were said to not be enough to kill her. But we don't know. She could have OD'd earlier in the day and was just now experiencing the results of it. You know, you don't die immediately when you OD.
I think drugs adds quite a bit of a wild card to the situation.
And also, the most important part, John Mark has alibis for the night that the boys died. He was always with somebody, and in fact, he called and complained to the police, the sheriff's office, the next day, and was like, we have fucking 3 8-year-old boys that are just missing. They're just gone, and you guys aren't helping us look. And that's what sparked the police to come out the next day and look into where the boys were, and that's when they found the boys deceased. Terry Hobbs is our second suspect. Let me tell you what I think about
him. He's so work.
Let me tell you what I think about Terry Hobbs, guys. He's an asshole. It's awful.
You love him.
I hate Terry Hobbs with a burning... I hate him almost as much as I hate fucking Regina Meeks, if that tells you anything. Lazy-ass cop. Sorry. Not sorry. Terry Hobbs' first wife says that he was incredibly physically abusive to her, and that's why they divorced, because she was tired of getting the shit beat out of her, right?
Yeah.
He also left West Memphis for a time 2 weeks after Stevie died. I don't know about you. You're not even married. Craig, you are married. I'll ask both of you. If you're, God forbid, something happened to one of your children that you have with your ex-wife, are you going to leave town and leave her to deal with it on her own, Stephen?
Well, of course. Isn't that what sane people do?
Good man.
It's also like there's video evidence, and I thought about playing the clip, but I can't listen to it. Every time I listen to it, it makes me cry. There's video evidence of Pam Hobbs finding out that her son is dead.
Ugh.
And she falls to the ground, she collapses, and she starts shaking, and she starts screaming, and screaming, and screaming, and screaming, and screaming. And they pan over to Terry Hobbs, and Terry Hobbs is not holding his wife up, not trying to help. He's sitting on the fucking curb smoking a cigarette. Are you fucking kidding me?
Current wife or ex-wife?
That was his current wife at the time.
Current wife, yeah.
That was Stevie's mother.
Well, yeah.
He was married to at the time. It's they're divorced now, but he literally like fucking sat on a curb and watched his wife break down, have a complete mental break at the news that her son was found dead.
Should be evidence number one before we start looking at the weird kid in town that could be a Satanist.
Literally. I mean, why don't you tell me, Craig, if God forbid something happened to your child, would you leave
sweet baby angel?
Your sweet baby angel, your beautiful sweet baby angel. If God forbid something happened to her, would you leave Sarah to deal with it by herself 2 weeks after this happened?
I give her maybe 3 weeks.
No,
of course not.
So literally, two weeks. That's why Terry was never interviewed. Because when the police came around to ask questions 2 weeks after the death, after giving the family time to mourn, he wasn't there. He was in somewhere 120 miles from Arkansas.
Like, he's not here. Now, he's probably innocent. Let's go.
Question, do you know if there was another woman that he was getting with?
It's thought that he was cheating on Pam, but it's not proven. So I don't throw that in there because it's not proven that he was doing such a thing.
Is it from
just hearsay.
I want a fresh start.
No,
this is not a Chris Watts.
This is not a Chris Watts.
Okay, it's not a Chris Watts.
What they think.
Yeah, you knew exactly what I was thinking, Chris Watts.
That's not what this is. Terry also killed Pam's brother.
No.
Pardon?
This is a thing that legit happened?
This is a thing that legit happened. So at some point, Pam and Terry were having this crazy ass fight. This is information I got from Stephanie. I don't know where she got it, but I know that I got it from Stephanie and I trust her information. If you guys don't trust me, feel free to look it up. I couldn't find anything that corroborated it, but I know that she's read a lot of books on the subject, so she might have more information that I don't have. At some point, they're into a fight, right? Pam and Terry get into this fight, and Terry slaps the shit out of Pam. And Pam's pissed, right? Because this is the first time that he's ever hit her. And so she calls her family, and she's like, Terry hit me. So her brother, like a normal brother would do, comes over to her house to beat the shit out of the guy that smacked the fuck out of his little sister. Like, I'm sure that you would do the same thing. You have a little sister.
Yes.
So you would, I'm like, if she called you and said, hey, my boyfriend just smacked the shit out of me, what are you doing?
I'm going to call my friend who is much stronger than me to come beat his ass.
Yes. So his brother comes over, Pam's brother comes over to beat the shit out of Terry, I assume, right? Because that's the only logical explanation to, well, Davey, he should have brought a gun, because this guy brought his fist to a gunfight. Terry shot him. Terry shot Pam's brother in the stomach. And when then Pam's brother survived. I'm assuming
he got off on.
He survived.
Oh, he survived.
Pam's brother survived, but he died later on due to a complication with the follow up surgery, like that had to do with the gunshot wound. So technically, it couldn't be considered that Terry killed him, because he had died from a complication with the surgery. But he killed him.
Okay. Yeah, he was just never found.
Was this before or after?
Responsible.
After.
After?
Wow.
This is one of the things that convinced Pam that the West Memphis 3 was innocent. Because I'm going to play two clips later. Actually, I'll play them right now. One is where Pam is saying that she would like there to be another case, because she doesn't think the West Memphis 3 did it. And the other one is of John Mark talking. So let me pull those up really quick. Get to your singing, boy.
I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna, I really, really, really want a zig a zig ah.
Zig a zig ah.
He's like the pig.
My future.
He's
forget
like
the, my past.
He's like the pig off of Chicken Little.
If you wanna get with me.
You could have just put a period mess after he's like a pig.
Trust me, you got five, ladies.
All right, let me see if I. Okay, so the first one is at 324.
Yay, numbers.
Questions his possible involvement.
I really think West Memphis was rushed to for conviction. They took three teenagers and convicted them. I would like for them to look at evidence that has been presented to the court the past couple of years versus the circumstantial evidence that convicted the three men that are in prison.
Mark Byers agrees. His son Christopher is one of the victims.
My faith in my heart and in my soul to every fiber that I have, that there's going to come justice one day, and those three are going to walk out of the Arkansas Department of Corrections.
West Memphis.
So that is Pam Hobbs, Stevie's mother, and John Mark, Chris Byers' father, both saying that they basically support the West Memphis 3. They don't think they did it, wow, right?
I think that should mean something.
Oh, yeah. Pam's family also believes that Terry was involved in killing the boys. And it is also said that he sexually abused his daughter, Amanda, Stevie's little sister. And she's fucked up to this day. Like, she's in counseling. Like, she's got issues, man, you know? She's trying to separate real memories with her brother from ones that her brain created, because she was only 4 when he died, right? 4 or 5. So she's trying to work through it. And then she also claims that her father sexually assaulted her for a long time. He is also the last one seen with the boys. And the last thing is, sometime after Stevie's death, a knife was found. I think it was found in Terry Hobbs, like a safe or something, or like a tackle box that he had. I really don't know the circumstances. It was found in something that he had by Pam. And Pam, like, asked him about it. She was like, that's Stevie's knife. What the fuck? And the police asked him about it. And he was like, oh, I just didn't think that my son should have a knife. I didn't think that my son should play with knives. I didn't think that it was appropriate for an 8-year-old, right? But yeah. Pam says that she swears she saw him with the knife the day that he went missing and is thought to have died. I think we mentioned this in the first episode. But she swears that she saw her son with that knife. And then she was super confused when he wasn't found with it, but she figured maybe the murderer stole it, or maybe it had gotten lost in the river, or maybe it had gotten lost in the woods somewhere, but then it turns up and Terry's safe. Like, she definitely thinks her ex-husband had something to do with it. Terry has also never been considered a suspect, not once, ever, to this day.
It's crazy. He should have been suspect number one, right from the, right off the bat.
Literally,
he the should moment. Have.
He also, let's talk about this real quick. He broke into his neighbor's apartment years before he was ever married, like when he was a young man. He broke into his neighbor's apartment and groped her while she was taking a bath. Jeez. He just broke in and she was taking a bath.
Real swan guy.
And he just started groping her. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And she starts screaming and he runs out of the apartment. And there's proof of this one. There's a police report that you can find about Terry Hobbs breaking into his neighbor's apartment and groping her. Disgusting.
But let's go after the guys who like
rock. Metallica, literally.
It's good. Have you guys seen the color of these kids' shirts? It's black.
Ah, no.
They're black.
Black.
God.
I like Oreos.
That is not a funny joke. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you. Let's also talk about one more thing. Terry Hobbs never cleaned. This is coming from Pam's sister, right? Terry Hobbs never cleaned. He was one of those old-timey guys that believed there was men's work and women's work, and he didn't do women's work, and he didn't clean, right? How come then on May 6th, the day that Stevie was found dead, he was cleaning and doing laundry and cleaning Stevie's bedroom with bleach? And taking clothes out of the dresser drawers that were already clean to put them through the laundry.
Well, because I've got a theory on that. He murdered children.
Yes, he murdered children.
No, oh, okay. No, it's definitely.
I was just making sure we were on the same page.
No.
Pam also believes that Terry was very jealous of the attention that she gave to her son, which is warped, completely fucked.
Yeah. It's like there's you also, treat this child like he's a child.
Oh, God. There's also somebody claims, it's hearsay. I got this from Stephanie's video. I don't know what and for where she got it from. It could be hearsay. It could not be real. I don't know. But there is a rumor that Terry told his mother that Pam doesn't give me as much attention as she gives Stevie. Like, it was a complaint that he made to his mother. Like, are you serious? Like, what kind of man says, you have a child and you're not giving him as much attention as he gives me? I'm jealous. Like, what?
I could tell you historically, the men I could give you as examples would be men that have killed
children.
Children. Yes.
So as you can see, Carrie didn't like Stevie, right? Didn't like Stevie. It's also known, like it's common knowledge, that every alibi that Terry has ever given the police has been proven, like disproven by the people that he uses to corroborate. Like David Jacoby, he claimed that Regina Meeks was his alibi. He claimed that there was another guy that was his alibi, and all three of these people were like, I don't know what this guy's talking about. I didn't see him that night. I didn't talk to him that night. Or I went out in the woods and looked, but he was not fucking with me. Like, he went home. Like, every single person that he's used as an alibi has been like, no.
But they arrest the guys that are wearing black shirts.
Yes. Yes, they did. At this time is when the boys decide to take an Alford plea. It's brought up by Damien's defense team. They're like, listen, we could do another trial and, you know, you guys might come out on top. You might not. You know, if you guys want to avoid that and you want to avoid a lawsuit, we should just do an Alford plea, right? Because we talked about what an Alford plea is. An Alford plea is when you plead guilty but maintain your innocence. So,
yeah, it's
they get to walk free.
The butler of Batman.
Yes.
Is what Alfred. It is named after.
They got to walk free, which let's talk about that for a second. If you guys really think these fuckers were guilty, Why are you letting child murderers out of prison? Why? Pourquoi? Yeah. I don't understand. So they take the Alfred plea, right? And the boys get to walk free. And if you do research, Damien is now living his life in New York, doing his Wiccan thing. He's got a YouTube channel. If you guys want to hit him up, it's Damien Echols on YouTube.
Dating chicks that don't shave their armpits.
Dating chicks that don't shave their armpits. Jason is also married, and he is studying to be a lawyer in Portland. He is also looking into potentially clearing his name and getting exonerated, maybe just on his own, maybe without involving the other two. Because the stipulation to them accepting the Alfred plea was that all three of them had to accept it. And Jason really didn't want to. He was like, I don't want to fucking lie anymore. Like, I didn't do this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, his best friend's life is on the line. His best friend's on death row. He's like, I don't want to fuck around with Jesse and Damien's life. I'll handle my shit on my own later on. I want them to get out, so I'll take the Alfred plea, right?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So he's out. He's gotten married.
Plus, he probably looks at it as this is the easiest approach to get out.
Jason doesn't care.
It's another thing.
Jason is one of those, like, when you listen to him speak, he doesn't give
two shits. He just wants the truth.
Shits about the easy way out. He doesn't want to be considered a guilty man. He wants to be able to get a job. He wants to be able to own a firearm. He wants to be able to do.
He's going to law school. I mean, that tells you right away.
Exactly. He doesn't care about how fast it is. He just wants the truth. He wants to be exonerated. He doesn't want to be a guilty man anymore because he knows he didn't do anything. So he's married and studying law. He's in Portland, I believe. And Jesse Miss Kelly, you know, the guy that started all of this, and nobody blames Jesse, and I don't think anybody should, because it's not Jesse's fault that he was coerced. It's not Jesse's fault that the police manipulated him, you know. And lots of people are like, oh, well, he was just giving a witness statement and he incriminated himself. No, he didn't. He had the IQ of a 6-year-old and was telling the police whatever they wanted to hear so he could go home. He had a girlfriend. He was like, I wanted to go home. And, you know, he said that he wanted to go home and screw his girlfriend, which, you know, he's 17. You know, does he have the mind of a 6-year-old? Yeah, but he's 17.
He's still got the dick of a 17-year-old.
Exactly. So he was like, I wanted to go home and screw my girlfriend, so I told him whatever they wanted to hear.
Fair enough.
But Jesse stays out of the limelight. He really doesn't like talking to the press. He doesn't like giving interviews. He doesn't like talking to anybody. You can catch him. Like, they have panel talks sometimes, three of them, where they all go and sit and answer questions. And Jesse will be seen in those. But other than that, he doesn't really like to be in the limelight at all. He does still live in West Memphis, though. He lives with his father, if I'm not wrong, because I think he needs the extra help, to be completely honest. So he lives with his father, and he stayed in West Memphis. I think we've made our theories pretty clear. Do you think we need a theories section?
I mean, Terry, dude, they did it.
I think it was the snapping turtle.
Terry and that turtle teamed up together.
Terry and the turtle.
It was the Satanist turtle that did it.
Honest to God, I really think that Terry did it. I think that Terry killed Stevie in a fit of rage. I think that Terry got pissed off because he wasn't home when he was supposed to be home.
And I'm assuming with the other two boys just simply because they were there.
Exactly. So he beat the shit out of his son, and I think he beat the shit out of his son or his stepson so bad that Stevie died or was unresponsive. And so he thought that Stevie had died. And so he either stripped all their clothes off or found them when they were naked swimming in the river. So let's assume that they weren't naked. He strips all their clothes off, takes the laces
either
out
way,
of their
it
shoes,
could
and
fit
ties
with
them
it.
Up and ties them up and throws them in the water to make it look like some kind of gruesome murder when it really wasn't.
Yeah.
I think
probably
that all
to
of
make
the tying
it look
up
like
and,
it could have been sexual.
Exactly.
Though, you know, trying to make it look like a pervert or a Satanist did it.
Literally. Because, like, the only kid that died before he was put into the water was Chris. And Chris was the smallest of the boys. So it's not crazy to believe that, you know, the same level of beating that he put Stevie and Michael through killed Chris, because Chris was the smallest out of all of them.
Yeah.
He was a little boy. And so, you know, he beats the shit out of these three boys. Chris dies. The other two are unconscious. He throws them in the water thinking that they're dead. They drown. and then they're found dead the next day. Because
definitely the most reasonable theory to me.
There's also a rumor, just so everybody knows, I can't remember where I heard it, but there's a rumor that Terry Hobbs supposedly found the bodies before the police did, but he didn't say anything because he didn't want to be considered a suspect. So he found the bodies of his dead stepson and two other boys and just, I don't want to be considered a suspect, so I'm just not going to say anything, you know?
How in the fuck did the police not?
He definitely knew where they were.
Literally.
He was the first.
I think she's more speaking on the books that he found them first, you know? Because on the books, the guy didn't do a single thing.
If you guys would like to get more information, you guys can watch the Stephanie Harlow videos that I kind of use to supplement my own research. You guys can watch all three of the Paradise Lost documentaries. They are on Amazon Video. I think they're $2.99 a piece to rent for 2 days, and that's definitely enough time to get through them. In fact,
also on HBO, aren't they?
Yeah, they're also on HBO.
Yeah.
And I think that Steven and I are actually going to watch them because he hasn't seen them because he didn't want to watch anything getting into the case.
No, I go in blind for these.
So look into Stephanie Harlow's video about the West Memphis Three. She also has some other cool videos if you guys are looking into some stuff that maybe we haven't covered and maybe some cases that we won't cover. She has a lot of serial killer series and stuff like that. And she does really good information. She gives really good information. So if you guys want to look into her, please do. Her name is Stephanie Harlow on YouTube. You guys can find the Paradise Lost documentaries. And then you guys can also find copies of Jesse Miss Kelly's confession online. I don't have any links for them, unfortunately, because they're so scattered.
Go in with an
open mind, though, because a lot of the videos of Jesse Miss Kelly's confession that are out there are highly biased that he's guilty. So go in with an open mind. Remember everything that we've talked about. There's also Damien's books. I believe he has two of them. The one of them that I actually know the name of is called Life After Death. There's also West of Memphis, which is another movie based off of the case. And there's a movie with Reese Witherspoon called Devil's Knot. If you guys don't like the documentary and you guys would like a more theatric version of child murder and an unfair case, watch the one with Reese Witherspoon, you know?
I've never heard of that.
I really want to watch it.
Is it an older movie?
It looks like it focuses on Pam Hobbs a lot and Steve.
Wow.
And it would actually, I've always wanted to watch it. I just can't find it.
Be interesting to see from that perspective.
So there you go, guys. I've given you all the information and all the resources that I used. I guess the only resources that I can't give you are the clips that I used because they were from Paradise Lost and they were from interviews from other from TV stations. So if you guys want those, you guys will have to go find those. I'm sorry. Do you have anything you want to plug? Stephen or Craig? We'll allow Craig to plug.
Let's do Craig first.
Craig, do you plug?
You can follow my podcast at PW Apologist on the Twitter. And you can follow me at Craig Radkins on the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
All right. And you can follow me at Dragon Blazer Productions on Facebook, Instagram, and my YouTube page. You can also follow me on Twitter at Dragon Blazer Pro.
And if you guys would like to keep up with Unsolved Comedy, you can follow us on Instagram at @unsolved_comedies. You can also find us in a few of the Unsolved Mysteries groups on Facebook if you guys are looking to connect with like-minded people. And you can find us on the Dragon Blazer Pro Instagram page. He updates it with all of his podcasts, but...
yeah. Some better than
also
others.
Ours. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you guys have any
suggestions. This was a lot of fun. I mean, horrible topic, but a lot of fun.
If you guys have any suggestions about unsolved cases, please let us know at unsolvedcomedy@gmail.com or at the unsolved_comedies Instagram page. We are totally looking for more unsolved cases to cover.
Yeah.
All right. And don't be a Satanist turtle.
Don't be a Satanist turtle on our next episode of Unsolved Comedies, please.
Let's not bash all Satanist turtles. They're not all.
All Satanist.
Exciting murderers.
Well, if they're Satanist turtles, they're murderers.
All of them.
If they wear. If they paint their turtle toenails black.
They paint their turtle toenails black. And paint their turtle shells black and wear black turtle shell cozies. I don't know.
Cozies.
Okay. All right. I think we beat this now. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.